Hi, I'm Marcus Jones, Chief Digital Officer at Premier, which produces this podcast and many others. Like you, I love listening to these amazing podcasts. I also love hearing about the people who are impacted by them, like Sheila from Cheshire. Sheila's parents were both sick and she was going through a difficult time taking care of them. But she started listening to Premier's podcasts and God spoke to her through them with just the right thing she needed to hear at just the right moment. She felt reassured that God had it in hand and that her parents would be safe. It's incredible to know how important these podcasts are to so many, but they are listener funded, which means we need your support to keep them going for people like Sheila. This week, we come to the end of our financial year with our funding need yet to be met. Would you consider a donation today to help us reach more people like Sheila with hope and encouragement through our podcasts? Give your gift today at premier.plus/donate. That's premier.plus/donate. Thank you.
The Leadership File on Premier.
Welcome to Leadership File, the show that aims to help change the way you lead. I'm Andy Peck. I'm joined this week by Martin Thomas, founder and director of Making Sense. Martin has been working in the charity sector for over 20 years in a variety of trustee and staff roles, including CMS, Church Missionary Society, World Vision UK, and most recently Viva, an international children's charity. Making Sense helps charities, business groups, and community groups in a variety of ways. And Martin has recently become a published author of picture books for children entitled My Dad Will Do and My Mum Is There. So welcome, Martin, to the Leadership File.
Thank you, Andy. Good to be with you.
So, and when you left school, could you have imagined that one day you would be a leader in the way that you are?
I was reflecting on this and I was not sure really I knew what a leader looked like.
Okay.
I grew up in North London in the 70s and 80s. And I think from a head perspective, the answer would definitely be no. I didn't think or realise that I actually had a brain until I left school and went to college. But maybe from a heart perspective, maybe the answer could be yes.
Okay.
That the opportunities, particularly in music, that I was given as a young person, led me to be a little bit of a leader in a number of ways during my formative years. Mm. And so I think there was a bit of a disconnect between the head and the heart, which later on came together.
Yeah. So you graduated from college, your first job, and how your career progressed to that point?
Yes, as I said, I wasn't very academic and ended up in a small college in Worcester. And I had a real passion for people and place. And so that led to a degree in human geography. And led to a real desire for connecting with the world and actually the movements of people around the world. I've always been interested in migration and what causes people to move, the push and the pull factors, as we always used to study. And so that desire to study human geography also led for me to understand what God is doing in the world with the movements of people and different cultures.
And I mean, I mentioned a bit of a list of the who's who of the charity, a little bit of a list anyway. CMS, World Vision UK, Viva. Mm. I mean, sort of standout moments as you look back?
Standout moments would be, I mean, going right back to the beginning after college of actually moving to Brussels and spending time with IFES, working with both student movements in Brussels, but also people from all around the world. That was my first taste of maybe as a young leader, being responsible for pastors from Burundi and Rwanda who wanted to learn how to speak English, and they were based in Brussels as refugees.
Wow.
So a real responsible position as someone in their early 20s, but it opened my eyes to some of the big issues of the world. Mm. Which were now on our doorstep in Europe. And for me, reflecting back on my leadership experience, those were years that I really grew to understand what was my offering to people in those situations. Mm. Who was I? I was only someone in their early 20s, and yet I was put into positions of responsibility, walking alongside people much older, much more experienced, but who needed me at that point. Mm. I learned a lot from that.
And were the challenges connected to some of the pain that you saw?
I think the challenge is very much connected to, for example, displaced pastors who were away from their families, their congregations, who didn't quite understand why they were now in a different country, which again we're seeing in our context at the moment with people movements from Syria and other parts of the world. So I very much connected, even though I didn't understand at that point as much as I do now maybe about why the people moved and where that pain came from.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the other standout moments were many years later when I was, for example, with CMS. As quite a young leader in my mid-20s, I was given the opportunity to manage CMS's work in the UK, Western Europe, and even Eastern Europe. And at one particular point, I was responsible for people probably from all over the world in all these contexts. There were movements of people from Africa and Asia and Latin America doing mission work in the UK and other parts of Europe. And so my team was diverse, it was cross-cultural. I had people from Pentecostal, Baptist, Protestant, Orthodox, Catholic backgrounds all working together in different communities across Europe. And one of my big leadership kind of learning times there was how to manage cross-cultural teams in often different contexts across Europe, and that was a steep learning curve, definitely.
Precious. Did you find you learned most from people, from talking with them, or from books in that sort of setting?
Probably 90% from people, maybe 10, maybe even 5% from books. I had discovered that I had a bit of a brain at university, but I've always recognised that actually it's only as you're doing that you're learning.
Sure.
And that maybe that can be backed up a little bit by that extra reading. CMS was a great source of knowledge and wisdom and experience from a couple of centuries of kind of thinking about mission and the movements of people in mission, not just across Europe, but across the world. And so I gained a lot of experience from pretty wise people who have PhDs and often piggybacked on the back of what they had said. But then actually looking at that, how did that work out in practice? How to do mission in Birmingham or in Malaga in Spain or in Eastern Europe, actually looking at the context, looking at the people, what they've been called to do. And a lot of my role at that point was not managing. And this is sometimes, I think, the difference between the leadership and actually managing something. I wasn't telling people what to do, but I was coming alongside, helping them understand the context that they had been called by God into, and resourcing them, equipping them, helping them walk through that journey themselves.
I mentioned in the introduction that that making sense helps charities in a number of ways. What kind of things do charities ask you to do for them?
Lots of different things, from the really specific to the quite general and broad. So often I've had an email or a call, Martin, we need help with a new website, or Martin, we need help writing a funding application for a particular funding bid that they're doing. And what often happens is I'll come in and sit down and we'll look at that particular piece of work that needs doing, and we'll start working on that. But then other questions start kind of coming to the surface, particularly about the identity of that particular charity and the impact they are delivering, whether that be in the UK or overseas. And I think one of my the strengths and of the experience of over 20 years in working with international and UK-based charities is helping charities understand their identity and the impact that they're delivering, and then weaving that through every product or communications or their operations that they have. Often charities sometimes are rather confused about their identity or the impact they're delivering. And so a new website might look very nice, but it might not be communicating the message that they really want to communicate. And so what often happens is that we take a little bit of a step back and say, let's review some of those areas in order to really make sense.
Right. Do you think is that because the challenges have changed over time with the charity, or is it that there's a DNA in a charity that the people that speak to you don't quite get? I'm just, because listeners might think, hang on, it ought to be obvious what a because a charity will have its charitable aims in a somewhere, and therefore, why is there an identity issue at all? But so I'm interested in just teasing that out a little bit.
Well, charities often run a huge amount on passion, and particularly the small and medium-sized charities, and they're often founder-led and they're movement-led, and the membership and the supporters have been alongside for many years. But often there comes a time when the charity needs to maybe recrystallise what it's about. Maybe the context has now changed in which they're operating, and actually what they used to be doing now actually doesn't make sense in the same way. Mm. And so they often need to ask themselves the questions, do we now need to exist? Or do we need to change our vision or our mission? Or do we need to think a little bit more about what is our impact? What are we delivering? Particularly the area of impact has been a big issue over the last year, as people have been asking the question about fundraising. What are you fundraising for? How much is going to what is called overhead or administration? How much is actually going to the beneficiary? Are we able to report on that impact? Yes. And the Charity Commission, rightly so, has had to tighten up in the whole areas of fundraising and operations, but also in the question of impact. I think it's also meant sometimes that people have expected charities to almost have no money going into administration, because I think actually it should all be delivering impact. And so I think charities have had to learn how to better communicate how they're structured, what is their vision, but also how they're delivering their impact both overseas and across the UK.
And give us some idea of the range of size in terms of personnel.
Oh, I mean, charities can be what I call the one man and his dog charity to the World Visions that I've worked for. And I think my particular area in making sense has been to come alongside those charities that are both the small to the medium size.
Okay.
Some of the larger charities will have those specialist roles and experience that can help them work through processes. But I'm often working with charities where they don't have a director of communications.
Okay.
And the chief exec is having to do all of that. And that's where particularly the experience I've had over the last decade of helping lead charities in those areas can add value, not just in the funding plan, not just in the new website, but adding value to a number of areas. And particularly as a leader, to lead in those areas of operations, but also a leader to lead with team mentoring and coming alongside an organisation as someone that can help add value in a number of different ways.
Sure. Well, you're listening to Leadership File with me, Andy Peck. I'm joined this week by Martin Thomas. Martin is the founder and director of Making Sense, and we'll be back just after this. Welcome back to the Leadership File with me, Andy Peck. I'm joined this week by Martin Thomas. He's the founder and director of Making Sense. We were talking before the break of his journey into serving, particularly an interest in human geography and the movements of people and some of the charities he serves, CMS, World Vision UK, Viva, IFES, and something of his journey into now helping charities clarify their purpose, etc., in terms of coming alongside and support. Your charity work kind of involved children in the past, Martin, which connects, of course, with the other element of your work, which is writing. So tell me, how did you come to be a writer?
Well, just to go back a little bit, my passion as I've worked with different charities, you're right, has been about engaging with children. And one of the standout moments from my time at World Vision was engaging with parents and children of Stagecoach, the theatre performing arts. And we put on a big flash mob at Legoland, not just have fun, but actually that was part of a campaign that World Vision at the time had about the number of children that were dying under the age of five around the world from preventable causes and diseases. And my passion has always been to you know, particularly in the charity sector, to connect supporters with what is going on, not just to ask for money, but actually to engage families with the issues that our world is facing. That particular issue was children's health, and that continued in my time with Viva. But I've also been passionate about writing and communicating those issues from an early age. Writing poetry, my dad always inspired me to write poetry and stories, and it was probably around 7-8 years ago that I asked myself the question, what might I be doing in my 40s or 50s, and how might that change as a leader, as a charity leader and as someone that wants to do a number of things in the future. And I started thinking about, well, perhaps that I could get more involved in the world of publishing and communicating in a different way some of the lessons that I've learned. One of my traits is that I don't get into something in a small way. I jump in, and so over the last 6-7 years, I've been to the London Book Fair. I've got to know publishers and the agents and all the different critiques out there that are looking at the world of children's publishing in particular, and started pushing doors and started writing young adult novels and children's picture books, and started pitching myself into contexts that I'd never been into before, and started getting some quite favourable feedback. But the journey to actually becoming now a children's author and being published has taken around 6 or 7 years. And as I now am going into schools to talk to children, one of the messages is that if you have a dream, don't give up, because you'll get some doors open and then they'll shut. And then you've got to nudge them open again in order to actually achieve that dream.
So I mentioned in the introduction, my dad would do, and my mum is there.
Yeah.
So those are published by?
Those are published by Wacky Bee Books.
Wacky Bee Books.
Okay. Yeah, based in London. As I was surrounded by boxes of books, having moved house with my family, I was really conscious that my children couldn't reach to hang things up or put things away. And so one day I just, as I say, splurged a little bit of a poem. If I could reach to hang my coat, I'd put it on my special hook under the stairs above the shoes. But just for now, my dad will do. And that was the start of a poem that was really about a child in the books. It's a little elephant, not being able to do things, not being able to reach things. And the dad stepping in order to help the child reach up to be able to hang a coat or to do those things. And really, it was the theme of an adult in the child's life helping that child reach their potential. So the heart of that book is all about the ability for a child to reach their potential through an intervention of a parent or a caregiver. I was then asked by a publisher, well, what about the mum's book? And we want it to be similar structure. There's a little bit of a rhyme through it. And so actually, I did what I think maybe all authors do is if they have children, is to sit down with their children and ask them and get their good material from them. And so I sat down with my daughter one evening at bedtime and said, okay, what does mum do? And she gave me this really big long list, and it became very obvious, and maybe you could say it's a little bit of a stereotype, but if the dads were there to help lift out potential in a child's life, then for us, mum was very much there and present at different times along the life of my child, whether you're swimming or walking to school or going to the park or at bedtime or in the middle of the night, mum is there. And so the key theme of the mum's book is very much presence.
Right. And you've been able to, as you kind of hinted, go to schools and read to readings there and other things with children?
Very much. So even as I had the dream of getting this book published, I also had the dream of what this might mean for an opportunity, a platform to go into schools and talk about presence and potential. So I had the idea of a little musical that went along with the books, and I had the idea of getting a puppet, a little elephant puppet. I think a few people thought I was a little bit crazy at the time, but actually it's all happened. We have a little elephant puppet. We have a musical assembly that I now perform with songs and backing tracks and all the images from the books in an assembly with primary school, and we've also developed workshops, craft and creative storytelling workshops for the lower key stages. And then we also talked about, well, what do we do with the older primary school children? How do we share this message with books that they might see as a little bit young for them? And so we looked at the world that I've been in terms of children's charities. And part of my work with children in schools is to look at something called Story Mountains and beginning, middle and end of stories. And so what I do with years 5 and 6 is to tell them the beginning and middle of stories of children around the world, a Bolivian street child or an orphan from Uganda or a girl that can't go to school in Nepal. And I tell them the beginning and the middle of the story, and then their activity in the school is to write a poem or a narrative or a comic strip or just a story about the end. How does that story end? And then they have to actually think themselves into that context. And then I actually share them actually what did happen in the end. And that's a helpful way of them being able to engage with what the issues in children, children's lives around the world. And many of the children that I'm actually engaging with might not have a mum or a dad. And the way that we can engage with those issues sensitively in schools in the UK is by sharing the stories of children from around the world.
Splendid. Moving slightly on to a slightly different topic, Martin, and that is the kind of tools that have helped you and maybe continue to help you in yeah. leadership. Mention anything that you know have valued in the past.
There are so many tools out there, and anyone listening that's in leadership that doesn't feel they have the tools I would often say is find one that really works for you, and then really get to know it rather than having a whole a whole selection of them that you only know a little bit. As I was in transition from CMS to World Vision, I very much utilised two tools from Gallup. One was their wellbeing tool, which is a really good way of helping you understand actually how are you doing personally as a leader in terms of your wellbeing right across the board. But particularly as a leader, I've utilised the tools that Gallup has in something called Strength Finders that helps you understand your own strengths. But they took that further in identifying what makes a good leader globally. And they actually defined what strengths-based leadership looks like. And one of the reasons why I have appreciated their model is that they don't define what a leader is or what a leader looks like. They actually define it as a good leader is one that is basically leading in their strengths, which opens up leadership. I much prefer talking about leadership rather than just leaders, because often people feel I'm not a leader. But whatever walk of life we're in, whether we have children, whether or not a position of management, we're all in positions of leadership in some way. And so the Gallup tools of StrengthFinder and strengths-based leadership help us understand that if we are in these situations of leadership, that if we're leading in our strengths and focusing on building up those strengths, that we can be effective leaders.
And is that the Marcus Buckingham book, particularly the Now Building Your Strengths?
So the strength-based leadership book is the one that I've particularly looked at, because that looks at how you both lead in your strengths and work with teams. But there's lots of resources within the Gallup portfolio, Marcus Buckingham, and a lot that actually are underpinned by some strong biblical principles. In how you relate with people and how you value people and how you're inclusive, that I've really appreciated.
And I believe there's an online tools that you can access for a price. And so people at home could easily...
For about $5, you can actually take the test, and then you get given access for the next year to certain other tools as well. And I found them incredibly helpful.
Good, You see parents as leaders. You mentioned that in passing, and it's certainly not something we've massively featured on in the program. Could you just tease that out a little bit? You're a parent yourself.
I am, and I think we have many issues in our society. There's big issues in leadership and big issues with families across the UK at this time. Let's not just look at the world. Let's look at the UK for a minute. When I was with Viva, we conducted research into what is the church's response to the issues of children in the UK. And a big issue that's coming up all the time is lack of aspiration and vision for the future. And parents have such a key leadership role in shaping our children's lives. It's not just for the teachers, it's not just for the rest of society. It's fundamentally the role of parents to do that in community. And I think often parents are feeling that they can't cope with that. They don't have the tools themselves, let alone these management tools for leaders that are the self-help bookshop, that it's just for the leaders to do. I think parents are struggling to find the time to even think about, well, what type of leader am I for my child? What type of role model am I? How am I setting values and the the examples that I want my children to remember when they're older, some of the tools that they can draw on either at school or at college or later on in life. As I was exploring the Gallup model, strengths-based leadership, there were four key areas that they say that a leader needs to build for followers. And I think this works not just for a management team in a charity or in business. I think this works at home as well. The leader must build trust, show compassion, provide security, and create hope. And I think we can obviously see that the provision of security, maybe a home, is really key. But how do we create the context of security, emotional well-being with our children so that they actually feel they can flourish and grow? Are we building trust with our children so that they will share things with us when they're going through difficult times? Are we the first point of contact, or are they uncertain about whether they can trust to share those things? Are we walking alongside, showing compassion and demonstrating love for them when they're going through difficult times as well as the good times? And probably the massive issue is, are we creating hope when there's so much turmoil going on in our own country, politically and economically and around the world? Are we giving aspiration to our children? Are we creating context of hope so that they actually have a vision for the future that they want to be a part of, and that they actually have a vision that they can shape our society for good? So I think those Gallup tools, which have been seen as key management tools and leadership tools, I think could be really used to good advantage in the situation that parents are facing today.
Martin, sadly, time has defeated us. There's much more.
That's always the case.
Much more we could have talked about. But thank you so much for your enthusiasm and heart for seeing, you know, charities and families come alive. And it's been exciting to catch up with you.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me on.
The website is Making Sense.
MakingSense.life.
.life. So if you want to get in touch with Martin or find out more about what he's doing, that's the place to go. Yeah. And the books, again, My Dad Will Do and My Mum Is There, published by
Wacky Bee Books.
Okay, do log on to Premier's website and you can find archived versions of Leadership File, including this one, in due course. I look forward to your company again next Sunday at 3:30. Thanks for tuning in.
You've been listening to The Leadership File on Premier. Andy Peck serves as a tutor at CWR, a Christian charity whose courses and publications aim to apply God's word to everyday life. Contact him via email apeck@cwr.org.uk.